Brainstorm Brewery is brought to you by GatheringMagic.com and CoolStuffInc.com. Show your support.
Hey everybody, welcome to the podcast. My name's Rouse Eric. I'm just busy over here disappointing everybody. Oh wait, that's 2 months from now when I'll be doing that.
That was a completely unplanned opening on Jason's part, but I thought it was pretty accurate.
Hey everybody, lightning bolt.
Yeah, lightning bolt. I think it's not too bad. You guys are poo-pooing too hard.
Nobody even probably knows what this is. Let's talk about Rouse Eric. Let's start off strong. With our picks of the week. My pick of the week, and for the next 6 months to 18 months, is don't pick Rouse Eric.
I think you're wrong.
Okay, so Rouse Eric was spoiled recently. He is a 2-colorless, 1-blue, 1-red planeswalker named Rao. Tap, his plus one is tap target permanent, then untap another target permanent, which I think is really relevant on your turn. -2. Rouse Eric deals 3 damage to target creature player. Very, very good. I like that ability. -7. Flip 5 coins. Take an extra turn after this one for each coin that comes up heads. Also very, very good. You're going to, on average, get two extra turns, and that should probably win you the game. Although, we don't really evaluate planeswalkers in terms of their ultimate. So, they spoiled this guy, and I was like, oh my god, he's lightning bolts on his stick, and then, you know, he can untap stuff. Like, oh, what if he untapped the Lotus thing, or the Gilded Lotus, or he untapped something like Izzet Staticaster? That's total value. But I don't know that on his own he's doing anything all that good, and tapping one of their creatures on your turn basically allows you to remove one of their blockers, I suppose, or maybe take them off mana so they can't counter a spell. It puts you in sort of an aggro type of build. A little bit more, and I don't know. I can't think of a scenario where I want him. It was sort of like Gideon when I first saw him. I was like, wow, he's quite good, and then I couldn't imagine a deck he'd be. So I feel the same way about Rouse Eric. It obviously lends itself to a Grixis or a blue-white-red sort of thing. I can't imagine a scenario where I'd be happy to windmill him.
If Jace is not being played, I don't think Rouse Eric can be played. Like, the fresh ability to me, you know, like I said, maybe I'm missing some stuff. It seems pretty useless. Like, you can't even, like, optimally with, you know, a block or in a tap and an untap, you want to remove one of their blockers and then untap your guys so, you know, you have a blocker. But it doesn't work. You have to choose, either I'm going to untap my guy who attacked, or I'm going to tap one of their blockers. Like, and that's bad. Like, obviously the lightning bolt part is good, but, I mean, is that worth
lots of ways to get value on tapping stuff on your turn.
Yeah, sure. Like, is it worth a 4-mana card when people are just playing Hellrider and killing you? I don't know.
I don't know if you want to be playing him on turn 4. I don't know if he's better.
Not a good sign either.
Somebody breaks him wide open in testing, but like every time I look at this guy, I like him less than the last time I looked at him.
He's a good card. He's a decent card. He's like a Gideon, you know, or maybe even a Vraska.
I compare him to Vraska, which
it looks like a $6 card.
Everyone liked it, and then all of a sudden, like, it just didn't have a home.
But I think once post-rotation, I think, you know, they're working out of the kinks right now. You know, they're setting it up. There's a lot of cards that are going to flourish when post-rotation comes, and I think this is one of the cards. There's going to be a way that you can use this. All you need is a good untap. I mean, you got Gilded Lotus. I mean, I think this and Gilded Lotus, you're doing some insane stuff along with other things.
Somebody said Mercurial Chemister, that's value.
Underworld Connections.
God, even sure. Putting you at 6 mana on 5, like even if he just untaps a land,
sure,
and tap one of their land to put you out of syncopate range.
Sure. Well, after rotation, you're not having Gilded Lotus in all likelihood. So, like, that line is out. I think the 4-mana planeswalker of choice after rotation will be Jace. Because I think the +1 is better for protecting itself. I think the -2 is on par. And
I don't know if there's a reason not to play both if you're going to be.
Sure. I mean, maybe.
I would want to play this with, like, Dustmaster Seer. Just because, you know, that'd be kind of the deck, the Grixis and aggro deck, where you're beating down and then you're beating them with damage, and this is more of a tempo card. But at four, you know, casting cards, you really don't want to play more than like two in a deck like that, if that, even at all.
See, to me, like, I think he only goes into a control deck where you have the ability to keep the board clear and then play this guy to lightning bolt something and then still have him. That's where I think it fits.
But there are too many, right now there are too many haste creatures. So even if you wipe the board, they played another haste dude, swung at you, you play this and bolted them. I don't know, that's Magic Christmas night, I guess, where your opponent has all the haste dudes.
I mean, but...
I think on turn four, you probably want to be trying to sweep the board.
Yeah, and like a lightning bolt. I don't want to play this guy,
but like it seems unfair to judge him in a vacuum entirely, not seeing the whole set. But with the cards we have now plus this, I can't see a deck for it.
Yeah,
see, you guys are just completely missing the issue though. You can get up to five extra turns.
I played Pokemon where the game was all about flipping coins when I was a kid, and I was absolutely terrible at that part of the game. I don't ever want to flip a coin in Magic.
I don't even like getting mana screwed. That much variance would just upset me.
This will be a blowout at some point, and then it'll be...
Oh, yeah.
It'll be very much talked about. You know,
all right. So a bad player at the pre-release who's going to have a 2-1 flyer and is going to deal you 10 damage with it because they won 5 points.
So can we agree that... Do we all agree that before rotation, this guy's not really going to have a home? After rotation, there's possibilities, but, you know, we'll see.
I don't think we can make a call on this guy yet, not seeing the whole set, but I feel like he has a lot of possibilities as a card, but the more I think about what deck I want him in, the less I think he's gonna be in that deck.
Alright.
So Ryan, you gotta chime in?
I mean, I like Relzerk a lot. I think he's gonna fit into a control deck with Niv-Mizzet. It lets you play Mizzet on 5, even without much more mana ramp. I could see him fitting into a bug deck. Rug deck. I don't know, I think the guy's got a lot more potential than most people are giving him credit for. But at the same time, I mean, I feel like I'm the only one that doesn't like him.
No.
I just feel like it's going to depend on whether or not, you know, like you said, if there's a deck that can support him. He's obviously very powerful. It's just whether or not the blue-red deck needs that ability.
For the record, Ryan is notoriously right about Planeswalkers, historically.
I do like the rampant and Niv-Mizzet on par. That's actually the best thing I've heard so far about him.
I've been scooping Niv-Mizzets at $1. I'm up to about 50 of them, I think. I bought a lot this weekend at $1. Niv-Mizzets, I just want Grixis to be a deck. Is that too much to ask?
Well, $1 seems like a great price, and people have been talking more and more in the last week or two about Niv-Mizzet.
I want to play Mutilate, and I want to play stuff like Counterflux, and I want to play Searing Spear. I just want to play all the good stuff, and I don't like the Esper build.
Alright, so why don't we, Sherbert, spoilers, and move real quickly here. Talk about, this is a request to us. When you guys decide to speculate on a card, you know, like, obviously we all think Niv-Mizzet is powerful. What does that mean for you? How many do you have? Is this, like, you know, Ryan has famously, you know, gotten thousands of copies of a card. You know, how deep do you guys go? And Ryan, how do you choose which card you want to go that deep on?
I mean, most of what I base my picks off of is how cheap it is versus, like, how much I expect it to go up. So, like, with the card, like, you're talking about thousands of Seance and Death Shadow and stuff like that, like, I think it goes up at bulk prices. They're never going down below that price, so it's super safe. So I feel comfortable picking up infinite copies, however many I can get my hands on, as opposed to something like Deathrite Shaman, where I only have about 200 copies, and that's obviously just because, like, it's hard to get, you know, more of them because people want to hold on to them, A, and B, there's, you know, it costs a lot more to get in on Deathrite Shaman. So really most of what it comes down to for me is a matter of how cheap the card is how many copies I want to pick up. Like, yeah, if I had infinite money, I might go deeper. But there's also a lot more risk involved when you get into those, you know, higher, more expensive cards.
Yeah, for me, it's a matter of term. Like, if I think the card is going to spike a lot in the short term, I'll go online and I'll just try to buy as many copies as websites will send me. So something like Amulet of Vigor, I got it on the ground floor when those are around 25 to 49 cents. I bought a lot of those. I tried to buy about 180 copies of Rock's Faithmender from Channel Fireball. They sent me 20. So I managed to buy about 200 copies around the web at a buck each, and I've been selling those steadily for $4 on eBay, so that's been good. So if I think, oh my god, this is going to double or triple or quadruple in the next 24 hours, I'll go online and buy up a lot. If I don't think so, and I think it's, you know, a much longer term thing, I'll pick them up in trades. So right now I'm targeting primordials in trades, and, you know, filling boxes of those. You know, people, like, if you value the non-foils at 25 cents, some people will be like, well, what's the foil then, 50 cents? I don't think all the ones are going to be necessarily like the $4 or $5 the green one is foil right now, but that's a longer term thing, so I'll get a lot more of those, but because I'm spending 6 months just trading for them and, or buying them, you know, at 25 cents whenever I'm buying. So, I probably have about 1,000 assorted primordials between, you know, like 1,000 spread over the 5 colors and about 25 foils. And I went super deep on Seance as well. You know, I got a box of about 1,000 of them. So if it's something that I think is going to spike immediately, I'll spend my money on it. And if it's something I don't think is going to spike immediately, I'll try to pick it up in trade so I have less, you know, of my actual cash money tied up in it.
Yeah, I think that's good. And I think this is a really good question because I come at it from a little different, a different place just because, you know, I don't travel to all the events that you guys do. So basically everything I do is done at the local level in the two local shops that I attend. So like going deep on a card for me, you know, the most I had is with the blue fetch lands. I had, you know, between 80 and 100 that I accumulated over, you know, 2 years in trading. Right now I have, I think, 25 to 30 Deathrite Shamans, you know, that I got in on it at $12 to $14. But usually just going deep for me in terms, like right now, obviously, Return to Replica Shocklands are something I've been going in pretty hard on. And I have maybe 40 between all five. So it's just a smaller thing because you're just, I'm limited by what's available in the stores that I'm at. And I think that's it all depends. Like if you're like Ryan and Jason, you're at all these events, you know, it totally makes sense to have 1,000 of them because if a dealer's buying them high on a weekend, you do very well. You know, it's a little different for me, in terms of the outs. If you go in that deep, you can sometimes get stuck with them. So I tend to go for the longer term plays, like the Death Rites and the Primordials and stuff like that. And it's just on a much smaller scale.
Yeah. I do much more long term on Moto for myself because, I mean, you can sometimes find some hidden gems on Moto and they could spike up, but actuality is really not too often. You'll spread yourself thin on a lot of cards. So you just try to target things. Like I got like 30 Death Rites that I'm holding on to. I got like 30 Niv-Mizzets there. Like 20 Abrupt Decay, Supreme Verdict, you know, cards like that, Slaughter Games and different things. There's cards that are usually high, you know, high powered cards that you know may be good later on after a couple rotations or maybe even you have to wait all the way until, you know, the complete set rotation and for it to actualize. But, you know, I play the more long term calls because it just tends to be a little bit more safer. And when you do hit it's better.
Yeah. And like, I mean, I would like, it's not like, you know, I have a set and I say, I want to have this many of this card. Like, I want to pick up every Return to Ravnica Shockland I can right now. The Gatecrash ones, I'm waiting for them to drop farther. But I want every Return to Ravnica one I can. And every time I open up somebody's binder and they have them, I say, I want to trade for these. A lot of people don't want to trade them or they don't want to trade them for whatever they want from you. So on and so forth. So like, at that local level, it can be difficult to go deeper. Once you hit a certain point, I know with Fetchlands, it got to the point where, you know, the 50 to 100 people, you know, are in and out of the two shops. I had 90% of the fetch lands and nobody else wanted to trade them. And I was just stuck, you know, limited by what you can get. So, yeah, I think it's good that we have a variety of different takes on that.
Here's a joke I thought of today. What's the difference between a player and a financier?
Big difference.
When a player talks about a speculation, they use the word playset.
Right.
As in, wow, I think Ral's Eric is going to make Niv-Mizzet really be a thing. I just went online and bought a playset.
Yeah, and when we want something, I'm going to buy every one of these.
I'm going to buy every copy. It's funny, because Magic Finance, sometimes it's really obvious, and being a player primarily really lets you highlight the stuff that, you know, the metagame, the way it's shifting, or a card that gets printed is going to make stuff go up. But the reason that we make so much money is because we bother, we go deep. Like, some of the people who are players are just right just as often as we are, but they bought a playset.
Right.
Yeah, but see, like with me, that's what I do. I basically buy playsets of everything pretty much when they drop to the right price on Moto. I mean, some cars do go down a little bit more and other cars rise and it balances out, but you know, I usually just go in and get a playset, and then I buy other cards to speculate on that are additional to that. And usually those are more long-term. But with the playset, you know, definitely like 2, 3, 4 cards out of there will spike, and the set will go reach $35, you know, $40, somewhere in that range. 30 to 30, 30 to 40 is a good time, and I'll usually sell them at that point. So I'll get a play, it'll pay for like a third of the playset that I'll have. And then if I do 2 of those out of each, you know, set, then I'm able to pay for my collection and constantly have it going on. And, you know, if you're able to pay attention to the financial game and not be so oblivious to it, you know, you could actually make Magic pay for itself. And
if that's your goal, I think if a card spikes from $5 to $20 and you got them at $5, you paid $20 for your playset, so you really made $60 at MTG Finance. So that's a way to make $60. So if your goal is just to not pay $80 later on the playset, maybe instead of buying one playset, buy 2. So all the money you made on that second playset, you can either have the cards to lend out if it doesn't go up, or, you know, just not have to de-sleeve your deck a bunch of times. But if you are right about the card and the $60 you made was not buying the playset at 80 later, you can have another 80 bucks or another 60 bucks that you made to, you know, buy other cards. So I think it's a good idea to maybe go just a little bit deeper, even if your goal is just to have the cards to play with. Because yeah, if you really end up right about the card, you could pay for, you know, a quarter of your deck just by being right.
And I think it's especially important when you're a player and, you know, you need these cards to compete. In that case, you know, it's true. Like 100% that's money saved. When you have to buy when you have to have the cards anyways because you're a player and you need them, money saved is as good as money earned. You know, because if you have to have 4, you know, Prime Speakers of Zaganas and you got them at $5 and later they went to 10 and you had to have those, well, then you really did save yourself $20, which I think is another difference. You know, if you have to have them to play with, that's obviously as a finance person, you know, we have to hit on the card because we're not really getting a lot out of them in the meantime past those 4 copies, whereas a player really can. But yeah,
all right. It's almost better because you bought cards you were going to buy anyway.
Yeah.
You know, so, worst case scenario, you paid for the cards and then played with them until they rotated, which is what you were going to do anyway.
Pretty much, yeah.
All right, but you didn't, like, invest as much money in your hobby that way.
Do we want to go through the picks of the week and then jump back into spoilers?
Sure.
Okay. Who wants
I'm
to?
I'm saying that, and then I realized that my pick of the week forces me to actually spoil a card.
Yeah, mine too, but that's fine. This is a good way to hit them as we go without overloading people too.
Well, Corbin and I are actually going to talk about the same card. So yep, Let's just go ahead and do it. Split cards are back with a new ability called Fuse that I really like. So the Fuse ability is you may cast one or both halves of this card from your hand, meaning you could pay the total converted mana cost of both halves and get both effects. So this is a split sorcery with Fuse called Beck and Call. Beck costs a green and a blue. Call costs 4 colors, a white and a blue. Beck says whenever a creature enters the battlefield this turn, you may draw a card. Call says put 4 1/1 bird tokens with flying onto the battlefield. So if you fused them, you would, you know, get the 4 birds, and that would be 4 triggers on Beck, and you would draw 4 cards. So a lot of people immediately saw this and said, oh my god, Glimpse of Nature is back. So there's a lot of speculation on stuff for Modern Elves. And one card that nobody is talking about in Blue-Green Elves that I have a little bit of experience with. I designed a Blue-Green Elf deck that the Godslayer top-aided an extended PTQ with that was running Intruder Alarm in Opposition. Now, Opposition's not Modern legal, but Intruder Alarm is. And I think Intruder Alarm is a card you want to be playing in Blue-Green Elves with this, because if you have Beck's ability till the end of the turn, you tap a Llanowar Elf, play a Llanowar Elf, untap that Llanowar Elf, tap it, play a Heritage Druid, your Llanowar Elf untaps. You're just gonna, you know, if you only have one mana dude, it basically is just as good as having the Heritage Druid combo, only it turns every elf that taps for mana into a mana machine. And if you happen to have the Elvish Arc Druid, you can actually just dump your hand very easily and just keep drawing new cards, and untapping the Elvish Arc Druid is just gonna be nuts. And if you tapped him for like 30 mana over the course of a turn and make him a 10-10, you can actually just swing with him, you know, after you play your last creature. So I think Intruder Alarm, if you're forced to play blue, and you are playing blue if you're playing Beck, because it's a green and a blue, Intruder Alarm is absolutely a card you want to be running in that deck. And it also allows you to run a card called Sprout Swarm, which convokes, and you can buy it back. And you can actually use the convoke for the buyback mana. So you can generate an infinite number of sprouts on their end step with intruder alarm, using the new sprouts to convoke the buyback and just, you know, keep making them and untapping them. And you can actually just swing out on your turn and kill them with a million sprouts. So, I'm really excited about blue-green elves now, because of Beck. I don't know if they're going to snap ban it in modern, but for right now, I would definitely pick up intruder alarms at two measly dollars.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty solid call, and it just shows that there's going to be a lot of options and room to explore with the deck. You know, because my pick here is Heritage Druid, because if you guys know, followed, you know, the news on Twitter as we were talking about it, Clodstone Curio, which is a 3-mana artifact from Ravnica, that allows you to return a permanent to your hand when you play a permanent with the same type. So it's like you play a creature, you pick up a creature. It's another piece of that elf combo deck that allows you to, you know, play an Elvish Visionary, untap your Nettle Sentinels, make more mana, pick it back up, so on and so forth. And that card went from $2 to $10 on Monday. But Heritage Druid really didn't move at all, and it's like $2.50 right now. It's an uncommon. It's a staple in Legacy. Some people have talked about being in Modern Masters, but I really don't think it will be, because it's not like it was a Modern staple before today, and it may not even be a Modern staple because the deck may not pan out. So I don't, and it requires elves. I don't think there's really going to be a tribal theme in Modern Masters. So, like, I don't know. There's a risk of a reprint, but it's not overwhelming to me. And Heritage Druid at $2.50 is one of those that always sells well to dealers because, you know, it's a casual card in addition to being Legacy playable. That's my pick. I think it's a pretty good card to get in on in trade, especially, or if you find them cheap at your LGS or so on.
I think you want to pay $2.50 on this regardless, because something like Imperius Perfect is close to $5.
Yeah.
And, you know, Imperius Perfect is, you know, it's an elf lord, so it's, you know, it buffs your elves. But that's, you know, a $5 card instead of $2.50 just because of casual appeal, so I think Heritage Druid has the same possible trajectory, it just might take longer.
Also, while we're on the subject of the self deck, there's a lot of different win cons that, you know, you have to consider. Obviously, Cradle of Behemoth is a likely one. Sometimes it's Emrakul. But if you look at it that the deck is making all this mana, another place to look is like Azuri, because that also helps against Wrath. You can regenerate your dudes and it gives you a mana sink. Or Draugr Warcaller, which also gives you a mana sink. And those are both elf lords that are cheap right now, so those seem pretty safe to go up over time because they are elf lords, with only one printing. So those are also good places to look, because even if they don't make waves in the modern deck, you know, I don't think you can really lose. I don't think they're going down. So, all right, so who wants to go next?
I will go next. My pick for the week is Niv-Mizzet. I think that because of Ralzer, I think that at the very least, even the hype alone will make this card just skyrocket. I see no reason not to pick them up. I mean, like we were talking about earlier, they're extremely cheap. There's just, I don't see a drawback. I don't think the card could possibly be any lower. I mean, the name's Niv-Mizzet to Legend. It's only going up over time regardless of how well it does in Standard. And if it does well in Standard, this could easily be a $20 card.
Even if it's not a $20 card, 10 to 15 seems likely.
Yeah, like you said, I think 20 will be the ceiling.
Well, you said easily.
Yeah, I mean, it could easily be 20. If Consecrate
Sphinx
hits
20. The card goes to 6, you tripled up, so.
Sure.
20 would obviously be gravy, but this card moving at all, and I can't imagine it not, because how many different printings are there of Niv-Mizzet in, you know, all the promos it's been printed at? You know, original Niv-Mizzet, the Firemind? Is that the one from? Yeah, so. Yeah, this. I can't believe it's as cheap as it is now.
I completely agree. I don't know. I just don't understand why this card hasn't been snapped up completely.
I've seen some more pros talking about, you know, I think this is a good weekend for Niv-Mizzet. Like, I feel like that it's coming. The signs are there. It may not be top to rotation, but the signs are there. It's going to happen sooner or later. And they're so cheap right now, it's hard not to make money.
Yep. Everyone's talking about it, but it seems like nobody's pulling the trigger. And I'm not sure why.
It's not a big event. You know, it at least hasn't shown up yet, but we'll see.
Sand Black hasn't broken yet. People are too afraid. Unless he's Chapin or Sand Black play it, then they'll be like, they're on the team.
I wish it were better with Blood Artist, or Sand Black would have broken it already.
All right, Marcel, what do you have for us this week?
I'll say Amboto. Just pick up Shock Lance. I really don't see anything else is being affected too much by what the spoilers are dropping. I mean, Tristani's pretty decent price right now, and that may see a little bit more play with the advent of the worm being spoiled.
But you want to talk about what that card is?
So Avenant of the Worm is an instant rare card. Put a green, 5/5 green worm token with trample into the battlefield. Cost one colorless, two green, and one white. So it's an awkward cut, you know, casting cost, but again, here's a very powerful token that could be used as a instant speed removal in an attack or whatnot. There's different ways. With Tristani is pretty good. Even with the new Planeswalker, you could untap Tristani and do some nutty stuff. So you're a Magic Christmas land there, but it's possible.
No, I actually really like it for what you said. Use it as a surprise blocker, untap, and then populate with Tristani. That seems fine.
Plus you gain 5 life. No, yeah.
Plus I mean, you gain 10 life if you do that.
Yeah, and it'd be pretty sick.
With the, yeah.
Yeah, 5 life each turn. So, yeah, Tristani is one of those cards that we've been... It's like, how is it this cheap for a while now? So all that stuff that we've just been saying, oh, this is stupid cheap. The metagame is giving us reasons to really want to go after that stuff more aggressively.
Well, and a lot of that RTR stuff that we've talked about has made moves. We talked about Abrupt Decay being way too cheap. It's gone up. We talked about Angel of Serenity being way too cheap and it's gone up. You know, these RTR cards are going to continue making some moves.
Stuff is poised.
Good word.
It's poised to go up.
So what about some of the cards that haven't gone up, like Underworld Connections hasn't really done anything? I mean, we could even say Tristani. We thought it was good, but, you know, it still hasn't done anything in the short term. Do you think that, you know, it just return around because it's going to stay suppressed until after rotation? Or
there can only be so much back when the set's still in print. When the set's still in print, the boxes have a fixed price, so much value that can be in the set. It's once something goes out of print, like Innistrad is now out of print, that you can start seeing, you know, the cards with nothing to hold them back. So, you know, I think that's, like you said, that's why when I talk about RTR stuff, yeah, we've seen some of the easy ones go up, you know, based on standard play or whatnot. It's really in the next year after it goes out of print that you can start to see everything make moves, like those casual cards. But yeah, so,
I think if you diversify too and you bought, you know, some Abrupt Decays, some Angels, some Tristanis. You don't have to be right on every single one because one of them going up will pay for all the rest of them. And so I think Tristani still, like, I think it's a good general. I think it's still got post-Innistrad block rotating out a whole year of legality. So I think even the stuff that we've been talking about being criminally cheap in RTR that hasn't gone up yet, I think most, if not all of it, will eventually, and some of it has already.
Right, so let's talk about, I have to bring this card up because I don't, you know, it wouldn't be me if I didn't. We have a Merfolk. We have a human Merfolk, which is interesting. It's the, I guess, the guild champion of Simic. It's one blue, one green, one colorless, a 1/4 human Merfolk legendary. For blue and green and tap, you can double the counter, the number of counters on a target artifact, creature, or land. So the reason I bring this up is not because I think it's good in standard, although, you know, it, I don't walk, but anyways, it's probably not really useful in standard. What I do think it has a place in is, casual circles. If you look at Gilder Bairn, I believe is how you say it, it's an uncommon from Eventide. It has the same ability, only it costs 3 mana and you gotta untap the thing to do it. And it's almost $2 right now, and that's an uncommon. So this is kind of in that same line, just shows you it has casual potential. So it's, you know, one of those, like, I assume it's not going to be playing standard, so it'll come down pretty cheap after the set comes out, and that's when you start picking them up for that casual play.
So this is their guild champion, though, am I correct?
Yes.
So you want running your maze for you, really?
A 1/4? I mean, yeah.
They got Merfolk, though, so, I mean, the champion is going to be Merfolk.
One Merfolk. Hashtag one Merfolk.
Hey, you might see the Lord of Atlantis or whatever. Master of the Pearl Trident.
It's good because, hey, it's a creature that looks like a merfolk that's actually a merfolk and not a fishmune. So
positive sign.
I'm a big fan of Sin Collector, personally, of all yes. the spoiled cards. I think that card is absolutely absurd.
I wanted to talk about that, yeah. All right, yeah, that's,
read it to us.
I mean, obviously being an uncommon, yeah, I mean, okay, so it's uncommon. It's one, a white, and a black. It's a 2/1 human cleric. When it enters the battlefield, target opponent reveals his or her hand. You may choose an instant or sorcery card from it and exile that card. And frankly, with Snapcaster Mage and an Esper Shell already being there with, you know, Restoration Angel being able to abuse this guy, I can't see how this card isn't going to see play.
Yeah,
he just completely tears open the mirror matches, I think.
We played with aristocrats or whatnot, a human reanimator, cartel, aristocrat, sacrifice.
He's so good.
It's all yes.
Like, compare him to Tidehollow Sculler. His ability is just so much better. There's no if it leaves play drawback, so it's one toughness isn't a liability.
Right, and even the Deputy of Acquittals, like, works well with him. I don't know how playable that card will be, but, I mean, if you do want more ways to abuse Snapcaster and Resto and stuff.
Well, that's actually a possibility unlimited with Deputy being common and this guy being uncommon.
Yeah, absolutely.
That'd be sick.
Yeah, like, I mean, I like this Yali-Sig with, it's almost always going to be a one for one. You know, it's pretty difficult to whiff on it if you're, you know, against the right decks. Sometimes a 2-for-1 if you get it, actually make a trade with it, and it gets absurd with Resto Angel. So it seems like it's pretty good against those Sphinx's Revelation decks. Mostly.
Worry. I don't know if it's main deckable necessarily, but.
Maybe right. Not, but it could be a good attack if you got like an Obsidian style deck and you really want to flood the board with the, you know, those type of creatures. I mean, this will allow you to take out the Wraths, to take away the Supreme Verdicts, and you can feel safe. You got Restoration Angel back up, you know, take away Sphinx's Revelation. You pull a couple cards out of a control deck. And maybe you can play 2 main deck and then maybe move up to 4 or later. I don't know, but I do think you're going to more likely hit something than you're not in most decks. You know, a lot of people leave back an instant, a good instant or sorcery.
Not every deck runs a ton of them.
I mean, you got the Blitz that doesn't, but pretty much it.
It's a pretty poor top deck late in the game, but, like, a lot of games don't necessarily even come down to people not having any cards. Like, it's just really good against those Sphinx's Revelation decks, I think.
Yeah, and like, maybe in Limited it'll get the only instant or sorcery in their hand, and that'll be something they were saving.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure you always play this in Limited.
Yeah, it's a more creature-heavy format, so you're less likely to hit, but I think when you do hit, it'll be something good. And playing a 3-mana 2-1 isn't great, but it's not.
Yeah, you'll find something to trade with, most likely.
I don't know. I mean, we'll have to test the format Limited-wise to see if this is actually anything you want, but it seems like it's got a lot of possibility, and I like the fact that it doesn't have a drawback for when it dies.
Right. I also like that they said they're slowing down the format because, you know, if you remember back to first Ravnica, I don't remember back then because I didn't play back then. But you're going to be forced into these 3-color decks a lot of the time and it'll be a slower format. So they said they were trying to slow it down, which to me seems like you will have more, you know, large instances of sorceries to play. And it seems like this would be good in that, you know, in that, scenario. So let's talk about, you know, I don't know if anyone has any other spoilers they want to hit on. How do you guys feel about, just in general, the return of split cards?
I'm super excited. I'm glad they didn't make them abusable, because I am sure, like everyone else, saw, you know, Fuse, didn't read it correctly, went and looked at Blighted Agent and thought about buying them out, so.
Which one?
But the fact that you have to, because of the Beck and Call?
I think
with Blighted Agent alone, like, that card would be absolutely absurd. But, I'm glad they made it so it's not a busted mechanic, but I really like the way they're doing split cards. I'm a huge fan of this.
I love Fuse. And they could have brought back the split cards just as split cards, and I would have been very happy, but I'm even happier.
See, it's interesting you guys say that, because, like, I'm kind of on the other side. I mean, obviously, I wasn't around when the first ones came out, but the cards just feel so, like, odd to me when I'm holding my hand. You have to turn them the other way. Like, and it feels very mechanic-y or development-y. If that's a word, like.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying. They're not broken. They're not
broken. Cards and entwine and put them together to make a new ability, which I'm fine with.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's what it is. And it's like, one of the things in the article they talked about was, oh, this really lets us have cards that can both be, you know, single colored cards for sealed, but they're also, you know, guild cards. Well, like, to me, that's like, oh, well, this just happens to fill this hole because we needed to do this. Like, it doesn't seem very flavory. Flavorful. It's just like, I don't love it. Like, I'm not upset about it or anything, but, you know, I'm not excited about it necessarily either.
Oh
my god, you're such a snark monster.
I hear what he's coming from. They feel very mechanical, and they're not very organic enough that they feel good. And the Fuse is crossing over both of the borders. To me, is just kind of, that's a big turnoff in my opinion in terms of just overall design style. But I mean, as far as the cards being 2 different things and the flavor of having, you know, name and having to, you know, like Beck and Call, Toil of Trouble, and all the other crazy names people came up with today on Twitter and whatnot. But, you know, I think there's a lot of flavor there, and for Ravnica, it's great to have these kind of cards there. I think they're a great fit for just the block in general.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, I think it works fine. You know, it's just, I don't love it, but that's why I wanted to gather your guys' opinions on it, because I had no idea if I was in the minority or majority there.
I think you may be in the minority. I like Fuse.
I think of the old school players, you're definitely in the minority, and I can see your approach because you didn't play back then. But I think for anyone who did play back then, we're super excited about these guys.
Yeah, okay. No kidding.
I mean, I'm pretty excited about Elves possibly being a deck in Modern. I do like the idea of that. So that at least has one split card that I'm a fan of.
What else do we have in the spoilers? Yeah.
So what do you think about this Master of Cruelties? How do you think he's going to play out? This is the 1/4, so he can't be Lightning Bolt.
Just another bad demon.
First strike, death touch, he costs 3 for a black and a red. And when he attacks by himself, he could only attack alone. And whenever he attacks, the power and toughness, if by player isn't blocked, that player's life total becomes 1.
I mean, he does have first strike and death touch. Obviously, Unlimited, this guy's ridiculous, but...
He's going to be pretty miserable to play against Unlimited if you can only play one creature a turn, and when you don't play a creature, he kills you.
Yeah.
Because if you can only block him with one dude, he's going to kill it, and then... You get like, but if you just double block it, like really bad creatures kill this Unlimited.
Yeah, but if it's
a win more, I think
it's but, not yeah. standard. It has no. If it had haste, I'd be pretty excited.
He doesn't have to block alone, so I guess Unlimited, like at the worst case scenario, he's a wall of don't swing at me.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's obviously insane Unlimited.
I want to play with Rancor, and all of a sudden you got to have more than 3 creatures to stop him.
That's pretty fair.
I don't know. He's got some application. I think this and maybe a Vraska deck, just because Vraska has other tokens that
maybe
kill you
not
one hit.
For, maybe Madcap skills.
Actually, that sounds way better.
That sounds terrible.
How's that terrible?
Because you're playing a 5-mana creature and then playing a 2-mana enchantment in standard.
But then you got a 2-mana enchantment and you could back it up with a counterspell.
I'm not listening to you, Corbin. You don't like Fuse.
All right. I mean, okay. You're trying to play a 5-mana creature and then put a creature enchantment on it.
Hell yeah. That's the best you could ever do in this game.
I'm never going to build this deck, but...
Okay, guys.
Gotta have fun, damn.
Yeah, it would be... No, I'm with you on that. I'm with you on that end of it. I mean, I don't think it would be good, but it would be fun.
It's not a card that I would want to dive into financially. You know, I don't think this is a pick.
This is a card I'm going to open at the pre-release and go, meh. And put it in my deck, and that's probably about all there is to it.
Yeah.
But it's a demon, right? Don't demons trade pretty good value?
No.
They're no angels.
Or dragons. Like, those are the two
big dragons. Let's talk about Render Silent, because that's a card I actually like.
Yeah.
Now, Render Silent is a 1-white, 2-blue mana instant. Counter target spell. Its controller can't cast spells this turn.
So, okay, important thing is that the controller can't cast spells this turn doesn't actually happen until after it resolves. So like it's not like gonna win the counter war or stop them from countering or anything like that, just before we move on so everyone at home understands that. But I mean I think it's pretty solid.
I like it. It prevents a lot of things, like it prevents them baiting out your counter spells. So if you're the control deck and you're not sure whether you should counter the first spell they play if they're baiting out a counter spell, this just prevents them from doing that completely.
Yeah, so like, snapcasting this on turn 5, like, doesn't seem like the worst. Like, I mean, those decks are already running counterspells, and this seems like another one to add to that suite, especially, you know, post-rotation, if they lose like, Dissipate or whatnot.
What I really want to use this for is countering the Emissary, the Burning Tree Emissary, because that's going to shut down their entire turn.
You're not going to... Are you really going to do that on turn 3? And what if you're on the play? Turn 4, stop their turn 4, they already killed you. I don't think so. I mean, this card is interesting, but I again, like the Planeswalker, I don't see really where it's going to be played.
Like, well, I mean, like, there's a couple decks that run, you know, generic, like, they run a 3-mana counterspell or two, whether it's Counterflux or Dissipate or whatever. I mean, it's just kind of another...
Well, why would you want to play this over Counterflux? I mean, besides, you know, color requirements.
Well, because Counterflux only matters against other blue decks, like against Naya deck or whatever. Like, maybe you want to counter the Rancor and keep him from casting a creature, or maybe you want to, you know, counter the creature. Like, then the other clause on Counterflux doesn't matter against those decks.
I don't think it matters at all, because really, creatures are pretty hard to counterspell right now.
Well, yeah.
Cavernous Souls running around, like, so.
Well, like, to answer your question, that's the advantage over counterspells.
I do like how it does, if you are a control deck and you're baiting them out to play a spell that you throw a counter, you know, a counter at, this does, you know, it makes them feel bad for throwing out a spell that they're having a good follow-up, and it can be an awkward situation. Yeah, I see some application. I think they did well making it. It's definitely an Azorius feel of a card.
Yes, it is.
This is very flavorful, and yeah, I think they hit this one on the nose.
All right. Anyone else have any spoilers they want to touch on? I know you guys, by the time you get this, obviously there'll be some more spoilers that you're probably yelling at us about for not talking about, but we don't have them yet.
Yep.
What did you think about the Flash card, the Deputy of Acquittals?
Acquittals? Flash, when it comes into play, you may bounce a creature you control to its owner's hand.
I haven't seen a single person talk about this without ending the sentence with a cube.
I mean, it seems good and limited. It's not a standard card.
It's insane and limited. It says may.
Yeah.
This card is just busted and limited. When there are, you know, it's a set that's very light on removal spells. Yeah, this is just solid and limited. Just playing a dude with Flash is good and limited. So, yeah, this guy's quite good.
It's a mini Restoration Angel. Like, you know.
It's a mini Saving Grasp.
Yeah. That's probably about it. I mean, it's, yeah. Although, you okay. know, you can value here. Yeah. Restoration Angel, your Deputy of Acquittals, and use your Deputy of Acquittals to bounce a Restoration Angel.
It's very good for common. That's what I'll say.
Sure.
So what do you think as far as, like, what we're going to see in Dragon's Maze? What does this tell you for, like, the common cycles?
There's going to be a lot of multicolored stuff, and that's pretty much all we can deduce from what we've seen. Yeah. Just a lot more multicolored. Or maybe that's all they're spoiling early, but...
One of the articles they wrote that was on the Mothership this week says, like, you have to come up with something new, which have to give people more of what they want, and I guess the news thing is going to be split cards, so I just expect more cool... You know, more cool guild cards. Like, there's really nothing. I don't think there's any new ground being broken here, but that's fine.
I bet we get maybe 5 at rare and 5 at uncommon, something like that.
Like the one card I'm super on the lookout for here that I think is a possibility that could exist is the Celestinia card that says when this card comes into play, populate.
That's never going to happen.
I don't think it'll happen either because of its interaction with Cackling Counterpart. But you know, that is, like, the card I'm on the lookout for. That could have probably the single largest impact.
And so, Advent of the Worm is 51 of 56, 156 in the set. So that means they're starting multicolored after 50 cards. So that means it's pretty heavily dipped into the multicolored format. It's pretty nice.
Yeah, I think we kind of expected that. I have to believe that they were putting on 10 guilds in it, they were probably going pretty heavy multicolor. So, it doesn't really surprise me, but... I think it's going to be cool. Like, I enjoyed, you know, the whole Alara block thing, and I think this is kind of going back to that, so, where you get your last set where it's mostly gold.
Yeah, as long as it doesn't bump the power level as much as Alara Reborn did, I'll be happy.
Well, if you guys like, we can go into what's it worth now.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's get us started.
I'm going to start us off. Everybody ready?
Yeah.
Do it.
Okay. This is the Happy Holidays 2011 card. Yule Ooze.
Oh, gosh.
As in Yuletide Ooze, but it says Yule Ooze, which is funny. Because it sounds almost Russian when you say it. Yule Ooze! Which I think is quite hilarious.
What's the answer to this?
Okay, would telling you what the card did help you perceive its
value? Absolutely, yeah, that will help entirely.
Let's read the card. Yule Ooze. 2 colors, a red, a green, because it's Christmassy colored. It is an Ooze creature type and 1/1. At the beginning of your upkeep, destroy another non-land permanent chosen at random, then put a number of 1/1 counters on Yule Ooze equal to that permanent's converted mana cost. Red and a green, eat some food, regenerate Yule Ooze.
Oh.
So.
$20, yeah.
$20 on cool stuff, Inc?
I'm gonna say 80.
Now, Ryan obviously has a little bit more experience with these, sort of things. They don't print too many of these, they give them out as I guess, presents to their employees, so $20 is pretty low for something that's that rare.
These are given to stores too. Most stores that run organized play will get one or two.
My co-host, Monday Night Magic Tom, he was a big Ooze fan, and he kept writing Wizards and kept bugging him, and then he finally sent him one in the mail, and he was ecstatic about it.
So. Nice. He's a little more ecstatic than you probably think, Marcel. He thought the card was $20. It is actually $54.99 on Cool Stuff, Inc.
And see, like, I knew the older ones were worth a lot, but, yeah, I don't know much about these, but now I do, I guess. Do they all, are they all kind of, you know, in that range, or?
Well, yes, some are, it depends on how old they are. They go up each year.
Right.
This yeah, so some of them are sold out and cool stuff. So when Fruitcake Elemental sold out, it was actually at 60. So which year was Fruitcake Elemental? I want to say that was like 2009, maybe. That's right on the card. That was 2006, so that was a little bit older. So it actually sold out for more than Yulu's is selling for now when it sold out. Not sure if maybe there's another website that has a price for Fruitcake Elemental, but yeah, for so that was more recent, and that's, you know, you can still get that for 55, but the older ones are worth a little bit more. So,
all right, I've got a good one for you guys here, I think. And you know, the reason I use this particular card is because it was surprising me the other day when I picked one up. It is a foil Linvala Keeper of Silence from Rise of the Eldrazi.
Eesh.
I'm gonna say 50.
Yeah, it sounds like 50, 55.
Okay, right.
I'm gonna say
70. 55,
okay.
99.
Wow.
So the correct answer is Cool Stuff. Cool Stuff doesn't have any. On TCG Player, there are zero near mint copies, and there is a lightly played copy for $70. On some major retail sites, they are $100.
$100. Now, I was basing that off the presumption that a non-foil Linvala was still around 18 to 20. Is that wrong, too?
It is between 20 and 25 now. And I know some major sites have them at as high as 30. So it's one of those cards, I guess. I mean, it sees some play modern. So, you know, that's part of it.
I just remember how good that was. In cool standards.
Stuff, yeah, I mean, Cool Stuff has one copy, one played copied in stock at 20. Like, the card, it's a little bit played modern. I think mostly it's just an angel from a set that wasn't open very much, and it is a big EDH card. So I imagine that's mostly what it comes down to. Foil angels that are good in EDH have to command a large price, like apparently $70 to $100.
All right. That is a surprise to me.
Yeah, it was a big surprise to me when I found one of someone's binder, and I was like, oh, this has to be good. And I was the same as it was probably like $50, $55. And then, I think I picked it up at 70 in trade because we just went off of what it was at on TCG Players. There's nothing else to do. But yeah, expensive card.
Wow. That's one of those situations where you tell the person, well, I think the non-foil is about 20, and, they might just say, okay, it's probably 40 if you don't know. But right. if you can look it up, obviously, that's probably what you want to do.
All right.
Excellent.
So, I'm going to get you guys with a sealed product.
Ooh.
How much was the Commander's Arsenal?
Where at?
Oh, man. Would you buy it for $150?
Yes.
Absolutely.
I believe the eBay value on these is 200-ish, maybe a little more.
Sure.
I know that our shop last weekend had a sealed event for a Commander's Arsenal, and the guy who won sold it back to the shop for $125. So I assume it's, you know, something double that retail.
Yeah, I don't know.
Sounds about right. I don't really know. Huh. I haven't actually dealt with a sealed one in quite a good amount of time since it like first came out.
I keep thinking the number 300, but that just seems silly.
Yeah, that seems way too high. I mean,
could possibly be that.
I mean, I'm trying to think about the singles inside of it, and it's usually a little bit less than all the singles combined. I have to say it's probably going to be 230, somewhere around there. I think the singles are probably 250.
So what is the answer, sir?
The answer is sold out on Cool Stuff at 250. So you can see it going to 270, I guess, maybe a little more. Let's see if it's on eBay or somewhere else.
I'm looking at eBay right now. Looks like, they're between 180 to 200 on eBay. Can only imagine that going up over time.
Yeah, especially if it's still sealed. I don't know if those ones on eBay are just going to be complete but not sealed or what.
Well, the ones I'm looking at all say complete, and we're getting that, you know. But it's, I mean, you have some at 180, you have some at 240. So, you know, it's obviously you got some variance on something like that.
Which is to be expected.
Right. I mean, and, you know, the sealed product is such a good long-term investment.
Indeed.
When you get stuff like this, or I'm sure Modern Masters will probably be there, like, sealed product is very good over time.
I certainly didn't hate getting 50 and all the Chaos Reigns I paid 24.
Yeah.
So you pay with cash, so you'll buy those for cash, and or will you trade for them, or what's your policy on sealed product?
I don't have the opportunity to trade for it, really. Like, you pretty much have to pay cash on that stuff. Because yeah. Like, what's your in otherwise?
Yeah, it's like I get them, you know, sometimes a store locally will sell them an MSRP, and I can get one or two, or I get them in collection sometimes. It's difficult to come across some, though.
Well, getting sealed stuff is tough in collections because people who buy that stuff, you know, are buying it because they want to play with those cards.
It's true. I mean, there was one particular collection I bought where I got an entire box of sealed, like 5-6 different dual decks, a bunch of from the vault stuff, and it was just kind of like the, you know, the nuts as far as collections go. And I got it and I gave him a fair price on him when I bought him from him, and I sold him a year or two later, and they had gone up quite a bit. So, yeah, sealed product, one of the best things you can put money in. Long term and Magic. All right, so does that wrap us up for the week?
I think so. Anyone else have anything else?
You got everybody?
Yeah, I think so. Everybody take your pick.
You'll lose.
You'll lose.
You'll lose.
Yeah, maybe I should. We should cancel the cast. We're done. Forks in. GP Vegas, here we come.
Hell yeah.
It's so far away still. Like, it's getting closer. And we're talking about it. We're still looking at flights, but it's still 2 months away.
2.5 months. That's going to go by in a skip and a hop.
I hope so.
That can't possibly be a real idiom, can it? A skip and a hop?
No, it's a stone's throw or something, right?
No,
Hop and a skip, right?
Living in Oklahoma, I've literally had
proximity. Yeah, we all know about your spaghetti idiom, but...
No, it's literally, I was on my way to a football game out in some tiny little town that I was covering, and I stopped at a gas station and asked somebody, and I think she said it's a
hop, a skip, and a jump, right? Yeah, that's like, that's proximity, not like an amount of time.
Yeah, it's a hop, skip, and jump.
I don't know why that bothered me. I just felt like we had to talk about something.
Well, time and space is just relative, so...
That's some Stephen Hawking shit you're busting out.
Going all deep on us.
That's
don't
truth.
Do that, Marcel.
Yeah, we'll get real deep in Vegas.
we're gonna lose Corbin here if you keep going this deep.
Oh man.
Somebody cut the binder twine.
I get it.
Another Corbin joke.
Well, this all sounds incredibly forced, so this is just real value for our listeners.
Well, they like the force. Because every episode is forced.
Well, from
our banter is usually a little bit more organic, but we're just not feeling it tonight. That's what happens when you talk for like an hour and a half before the cast, and then
We lose all our passion. I think it all goes. We're like so excited to see each other. We talk about this. We talk about. I even try to start the cast in the beginning off a good Jason joke that will not be aired in public ever again.
And then by the end of the cast, it's just Ryan going, "Shut up, Corbin."
I haven't said that at all this cast, but shut up, Corbin.
So tune in next week for more Shut the Hell Up, Corbins, and Murph folks that might actually be in the set.
We know the name of tonight's episode.
Shut up, Corbin.
Haven't we done one that's called Shut Up, Corbin already? I think we might have.
No, but we are now. That is
there can't be enough. never be too many.
Marcel got his name in the title last week. It's about time I got one.
Oh, you're next. We're there. We're going to go through all four before we get to Gate Crash. Or, what is this?
Dragon's Maids.
Nobody's going to know who Ryan is, though. You have to call me Shamble Shark or some shit like
oh,
that.
Oh, we'll do that. Shamble Shark's Revenge. There'll be some merfolk.
Shamble Shark's Revenge. Oh, boy.
That's good. That's a good title right there.
Shut you know up, what's Corbin. Sad? They only need to put four merfolk in Dragon's Maze to have it be a better set than Gate Crash.
Ooh. Talk about happen. Shit there. You get hashtag. One at the beginning, you gotta.
Hashtag four merfolk.
Four merfolk. There you go.
Okay.
I was probably speaking of the best. I saw someone made a coming up with a card. Make your own split cards that won't be in, Dragon's Maze. They're saying have Explorer and Explore.
Nice.
That is pretty good.
That is a good one.
Alright, so that sounds like a good note to end on. Go out with an actual good joke.
Someone else's.
There was a joke there.
Brainstorm Brewery is brought to you by GatheringMagic.com and CoolStuffInc.com. Show your support. And we're not stopping. Keep it going.
This is all hopefully getting cut. We should just do this for like another hour and a half, and I'm sure some people will listen to it.
But I want, except Marcel's girlfriend will find him dead in the bathroom as he hung himself around to edit this cast.
That's not that bad.
Let's, Brian, I hate to nitpick, but I believe it's actually hanged and not hung.
No, I'm
the
hung.
Verb there.
I'm definitely hung. It ain't hanged.
Yeah. Oh. Well, this was going to be a productive cast, wow. And then it degenerated.
You know you're on a roll when you resort to a dick joke.
That went downhill quickly.
That's what she said.
But don't bump. Tune in next week for.
Or don't. We wouldn't blink you.
Hey, we might actually have a drink on the cast instead of some lemonade or a Bud Light with lime.
Hey, that shit's good, man.
Man, I'm making another lemonade next week. Screw you.
You know what I'm going to make? I'm going to make some chicken wings.
Dude, I got some chicken wings in the fridge right now. I'm about to go heat them, motherfucker.
Tomorrow's Tuesday, so I'm going to Buffalo Wild Wings.
Of course you are. Why did you have to tell us what day it was before you said that?
I only go on Tuesdays and Thursdays every week.
I only go on every day of the fucking week.
See, we got Popeye's chicken out here. They got two-piece Tuesdays.
Oh, fuck that. B-dubs are best.
No, B-Dubs is not messing with Popeyes. Popeyes will shit all over B-Dubs.
I think Popeyes is a bad KFC.
No, it's a better KFC.
God. Yeah, let's compare fast food to fine dining establishments like B-Dubs.
Fine dining.
You are the first and last person who will ever call B-Dubs fine dining.
I'll take
you seriously. Never call it that.
I don't know. Okay, I don't know if this is getting in the cast or not, but if it is, there's a fun story to share with the listeners about B-Dubs, and that is after...
I bet they're very excited.
Let me finish. After all of our talking about Buffalo Wild Wings, I sent an email to their website, the contact us part of it, whatever, as a joke, saying, hey, we talk about B-Dubs so much on our podcast, people say you should sponsor us. So I actually received a reply from the regional manager looking for more information and sent me the name of who we needed to work with to possibly make that happen. And then I didn't because it was just a joke. But it was pretty funny. We got a real response.
But I think if we get enough fan feedback telling us that we actually should pursue this, we might actually consider it.
Free B-Dubs for, like, life? God.
This show is sponsored by...
I would actually like something tangible.
Gathering Magic, Cool Stuff, Inc., and B-Dubs. Yeah, I think it's got a ring right there.
It's got a ring to it, yeah.
Two of these three won't give you diarrhea.
Oh, B-Dubs is the worst value.
It is, though. Like, man, I'm sorry. Like, you could do so. Like, why don't you buy wings and cook them at home? Like,
why would I cook? I have a wife.
No. Not any longer.
Why don't you
have her cook? I mean, why don't you bring her some chicken wings and have her learn to cook some B-Dubs?
I'm just joking. She's a great cook. I don't cook. We're both busy at night, so we usually end up eating on the run, and I just pick up B-Dubs on the way home.
We had this conversation before. I forgot.
Yeah, this is all good stuff.
Yeah, this is A-plus recording material, right?
Yeah, this has not been on the cast yet. Are we still going to put this on there?
No.
We should put the story on, because...
You should make this ever since we tried to end the cast like half an hour ago, this should be like a little bonus if you want to listen to us bullshit after the cast. I mean, just so it's like... Not, you know, people think the cat, you know, we don't want to make them listen to this thing and they're going to get something relevant when they're not.
Yeah, and this will be like a hidden track.
Hidden tracks are so cool when you could get them, like, you know, on CDs. And then that doesn't happen now that, you know, nobody buys CDs.
It's a cool story.
Don't you still buy CDs down there?
I do, yeah, but.
They still have 8-track players down there.
I do buy CDs, but only from people who are really awesome, like George Strait and Taylor Swift.
Who's George Strait?
I'm joking. Also, I decided a few months ago I needed to, rediscover the music of my childhood. So I went on eBay and bought both Bewitched CDs.
What?
Yeah.
What is Bewitched?
It's like some girl band from Ireland in the like 90s. I mean, it was pretty, you know, not
awful.
It's about what you'd expect. But it just seemed like fun. They were like a dollar on eBay. And I was like, oh, yeah, let's do it. And then I listened to both of them. And I was like, Yeah, this is actually still awesome.
Oh, man. Corbin, you need to do a solo cast. You just need to, like, just talk about stuff. Go through your email and let people hear just random Corbin moments.
Hey, guys, this is Corbin Hostler. Tonight I'll be drinking a Surge over ice mixed with Bud Light Lime and listening to Bewitched.
Well, one of my friends stole the Bewitched CD from me, and he won't give it back to me because he wants to listen to it all the time.
He's doing it wrong for sure.
You know, and I tried to buy Surge. Okay, I looked everywhere on the internet. It just doesn't exist.
The Surge with your Captain Crunch.
You can't mix those two things.
I'm sure you can.
You could put Tang with your Captain Crunch. There you go.
Tang. I don't remember the last time I heard someone mention Tang. That's awesome.
That's since they defunded NASA.
Really?
Yeah, like I'm pretty sure Tang is going out of business now, because...
I won't lie, I didn't know they existed anymore.
I'm sure they do. That name is probably very... people that are old school.
I'm sure it's just another product of a company that makes more than just Tang.
I've got some Wikipedia information. Sales of Tang were poor until NASA used it on John Glenn's Mercury flight and subsequent Gemini missions. The Tang brand is currently owned by Kraft Foods. It was formulated in 1957.
Is it still being sold?
Sorry, Corbin. You get to talk about softball.
Do we want to talk about softball?
No.
I would rather discover a lump on my testicle than talk about softball.
But OU has the top-ranked team in the country.
Let's talk about breaking a leg on stage.
Or on the football field.
If anyone is listening to this, and for your sake, I hope you're not, we showed Marcel before the cast a picture of Kevin Ware from Louisville, who, if you guys don't follow sports, in the, I believe it was the Elite Eight game at the NCAA tournament, jumped out to try to block a shot, kind of landed awkwardly on his leg, and he fell and broke like a pretty bad compound fracture. And there's a picture of his bone sticking out of his leg that's pretty graphic. We showed Marcel that tonight. So that's what that joke was about.
I think the better picture was the GIF.
The GIF
was better.
Yeah.
Team reaction.
His team, the bench, they all just like jump backwards out of their chair or throw towels over their faces. They're all terrified. It's pretty graphic. I mean, it's a terrifying injury. One of the worst I've ever seen outside of me running into a light pole.
I feel like, how you refer to that as landed awkwardly. That kind of redefines the understatement. Like, well, landed awkwardly and like hurt my ankle a little bit. I've never had pieces of myself sticking outside of myself.
But like that's what happened. Like it's not like the Joe Theismann injury from the NFL where somebody comes down on his leg and that's what caused it. Like he literally just like landed at a bad angle and it's just a freak accident. Like nobody even touched him.
Milk, probably.
Exactly. Right? That's what happens when I'm surprised it's not a meme. Like it's just this guy didn't drink his milk. But anyway, so, it's I can relate because I also had the experience of looking, at parts of your body that aren't supposed to be, sticking out of your leg when I hit a light pole and busted my knee open.
Is it still on YouTube? Is that like the first thing that comes up when Corbin hits a pole or whatever?
It's on YouTube. It's Corbin hits a light pole.
Yeah, don't type in Corbin gets pulled. Something different comes up and you don't want to watch the whole thing.
Yeah, please have your Google Safe Search on when you do that.
You do want to watch Corbin hits a light pole, though. I promise you that. It's the best 6 seconds of your life.
While you're at it, type in meat swing.
It's meat spin. You do not want a meat spin.
How do you know that, Corbin? I didn't know that.
So I used to play these things called internet games, like StarCraft or Warcraft, and I'd frequent the forums where people would, send you the ninja links that take you to things like that. I believe it is. I don't remember what the term for it is, but that's how I know about that. Don't be a dick.
No pun intended.
Just go watch Corbin hits a light pole.
So what about some shout-outs? You guys haven't gave out enough shout-outs to nobody for quite some time.
Oh, Carter Hatfield for letting me chop a booth with him at the West Michigan Gaming Convention. That was actually the most profitable two games in gaming.
Giving myself a shout-out for giving up that spot to Jason.
How did that go, Jason?
It was insane. We budgeted $3,000 for the whole weekend, and we spent $3,000 in the first 6 hours. And that was just buying it. Numbers that if I were offered those numbers as a seller, I would not have said yes. And then it came back to me that I was paying the best in the room on everything.
I mean, percentage-wise, I think I beat you out, like, as far as, like, how terrible numbers I got to offer. But I was also at an anime show, which, they're awful. The people who were at those shows, Magic is certainly nothing competitive to them.
I I spent the weekend, actually, which is, I mean, this is kind of cool, I guess, creating, like, I guess you call it a partnership with the LGS and stocking a case there, which is a bunch of casual cards that I'm now going to be able to sell at, you know, pretty much retail, which is, you know, way different than me buy listing them at the next GP I go to. So I guess it was profitable for all of us, but more so you guys.
Yep, I definitely spent 4 hours at my LGS today completely redoing how I even stocked my case. I jammed probably 3 times as many cards in there as I had before, so that's how much I came back with. I had enough stuff that I'm like, I'm going to put a ton of this on eBay, but I've got enough to really jam-pack this case, so I'm really excited about the future of that whole arrangement.
Yeah, like, the thing I'm most excited about is now when people go into his store to sell cards. Before, he didn't buy because the owner doesn't really know a lot about Magic. Now he's giving them my numbers, sending them to me, which should give me a pretty good line on collections. Also, it allows me to, maybe not feel guilty when I give people a price on their stuff because I'm, you know, officially representing a store while I'm doing it. So
I know from experience that fewer than 10% of the people who receive your phone number will actually call you.
Yeah.
That is too much effort for most people.
Right, but it is, you know, 8% more than I have right now, so.
Because Steve tells me all the time, he's like, hey, I gave your number out to 3 people this week. Okay. None of them called me. So they will just, like, go to another store if it involves picking up the phone and making a call.
I'm just going to tell him to get their number and give me their number, and then I'll try
that. That is the way to do it. That's what I decided on eventually.
Actually, I might talk to him about that. That's not a bad idea.
See, guys, there is actual usable stuff for this bonus material.
Yeah, that was probably more useful than anything we talked about in the past.
Yeah, I would say that is true of, like, the last 12 episodes.
It was just colored with some Taylor Swift.
This really started to go downhill around the time I joined, I think.
A year ago?
That was the signal, the beginning of the end.
Which was
the,
like,
Yoko Ono to this podcast.
Episode 3, the beginning of the end.
Yep, we've seen the numbers. You actually could tell the moment that you joined the cast and how we lost half of our listeners.
We went down to about 4 from the 8 we had previously.
I know. Well, I mean, come on, Corbin, tell them the truth. It was actually like 100 and then we went to 50.
Yeah.
Still, you scared away 50 people, Jason.
I don't know, man. I think back to those first couple episodes. I think we had to be bad.
I don't know. The comments were actually pretty scathing. If I wanted to hear someone who didn't know what they were talk about finance, I'd go on Reddit.
I think you wrote that.
Well, it was just like, there was no banter, there was no having fun, it was just like Marcel asking Ryan and I questions and us giving really stiff answers.
Yeah, yep. And then I came on here and started insulting Corbin, and that really brought it all together.
And what? It did.
Yeah. I will tell you, Corbin, that honestly, all the anti-Corbin sentiment comes from a place of genuine disdain. And I'll tell you when it happened. We're all in Indiana.
And you made us go to B-Dubs.
And you made us go to Buffalo Wild Wings. You shanghaied a whole group into going to a restaurant that is in every city in the United States.
I did do that. You know what? I enjoyed it.
Indianapolis, Indiana, a city that has Fogo de Chao, St. Elmo's Steakhouse, and a restaurant called O'Reilly's that my buddy, who's a local, was trying to take us to. You shanghaied the whole group and made us go to Buffalo Wild Wings, and I thought to myself, you know, I really don't like this Corbin fucker sometimes.
But is that the trip where we went to B-Dubs with Noah Winston and Ryan and I argued with him for forever about something stupid?
That is literally that exact night.
All right.
Yeah, we argued with him about the fact that you couldn't track the values of cards based on, like, other cards that had come out in the past, like comparing Consecrated Sphinx to Nidhogg, like it did in this episode. He said that that's not a thing you can do.
Oh, yeah. Like, yeah, you
can't.
And
then we did it tonight, is that what you're saying?
Well, I'm just saying Noah's always wrong, and I'm usually just going to school the little kid.
Uncensored after the cast.
You can put that in the cast, in fact. Noah Winston, if you listen to this cast,
don't do
I
that.
Like you, I like you, kid, but God, are you cocky. Like, no,
well, it's actually funny because I think while we were having this conversation, Noah had like a 6-foot-tall national debate champion trophy just sitting there, just making us feel
weird. And that just proves.
Every time Ryan said, "You don't know what the fuck you're talking about," he would like subtly like look out of the corner of his eye to make sure his giant debate champion trophy was still on the table.
Yeah, and that's fine.
Are you sure I'm wrong? Are you sure? Can I have my 2.5 minutes for a rebuttal, please?
And that just proves that our middle schools are too soft nowadays.
Oh, God. That was Ryan coming out firing here.
See, this is...
Here's this and comes back at you.
Noah Winston, for convincing the judge that you're only wrong half the time instead of all the time, you get the debate champion trophy.
We got Magic Beef now. It's going to be all over the Twitter.
Oh, my gosh. I'm definitely making sure that kid hears this.
The best part is
He doesn't have time to listen to us. He's the next level Kelly Reed. That man just doesn't have time for shit like this. Boy, I should stop now.
Don't stop.
Who else can I call, Alex? Let's see. We gotta have somebody else.
Buddy, keep going, right?
Our last episode. It should be episode 50.
Keep going.
This is good.
Marcel, please tell me, like most weeks, you're actually not recording.
We're recording. What's going on?
Man, there's gotta be someone else I can insult.
The more you say we're not recording, please cut this.
All right, let's go, Ryan. Let's go.
I'm working on it. I'm trying to figure out who I can insult next. Corbin, you suck.
I would just like to point out.
That's too easy.
Let's go into the listeners by name.
I would like to point out that everyone we're talking about are friends of ours, and this is all done in fun.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh. Yes.
It was all fun and games, and I was telling Corbin that I genuinely hated him for a whole weekend.
Sometimes I hate myself after going to beat-ups, but it's rare. My friends, if it makes you, nobody here wants to go with me either.
Yeah, I don't want to ever go with you again. I will no longer be your friend if you make me go to that fucking place again.
Around Kalamazoo, and we wanted to go someplace to eat, and we drove by a B-Dubs, and we actually just said, fuck it, went inside. I don't know.
In all fairness, I do believe it started with you saying, man, we're going to get made fun of for doing this, but I kind of want B-Dubs. And then we went there, and we left, and we were like, that was a mistake.
Yeah, so, we were talking about how much we hated Corbin. And then I was like, man, I could go for some B-Dubs.
Corbin, you work up an appetite.
Just hating you makes a man hungry for some
reason. Yeah, I think it's interesting that this whole denigrate Corbin thing and blame Corbin for everything is actually like it just happens to me most circles I'm in around here. People blame like
weird.
The joke is really odd. I know, huh? Like how could that happen?
That is totally based on random chance.
At home, the joke is that I was responsible for the Ice Age. Because I just get blamed for everything, whether I'm even there or not.
The Ice Age?
Yeah, well, you
hang out with three-year-olds? No, you're responsible for everything wrong in financial magic, but the Ice Age? Come on.
Like I said, I find that I tend to get blamed for most things, regardless of whether or not I'm even there.
As you should.
I would like to think it's because I take it pretty well.
That's what I heard.
That was...
All the zingers.
Oh, no.
This is better than the podcast we recorded.
Sadly, yes.
We did an hour of solid good shit beforehand.
Can we make this the podcast and make the other part the After Dark part?
Oh, and here's where they talk about a bunch of boring bullshit about Ralzeric that you probably don't even care about.
Waka waka!